I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion.
I want to speak about Islam because it's very easy for us to do the classic, and I think that's what they want us to do, divide and conquer. And the problem is that people are confused. They think this is about religion. This is about authoritarian versus a libertarian existence. That top horizontal bar is the lie that we've been told, that there is far left, far right, and in the middle is, you know, democracy. When in fact, what it is, is it's socialism in the middle. So they've lied to us and they've made us think that there's this thing called far left, which is supposed to be very different from far right. It's a lie. What is true is that the real, you know, spectrum is from total government to anarchy. And constitutional republic is just slightly below anarchy. It's where we have liberty and freedoms, and we live in Christian countries under the idea that we are given inalienable rights.
Loads of people call me racist for going to these, but I just want to be able to feel safe in my own community, and I just want to be able to walk the streets like my dad and my mum used to without a worry.
Dr. Mukaddam, what is the penalty for apostasy?
If it's an Islamic country, then the Sharia is very clear. Apostasy is dealt with the death penalty.
Thank you. That's all I want to hear.
He plays his games. We play our.
They agree this fake paradox of political systems is something totalitarian or is it libertarian?
If we start going Islam, is evil and they're all, barbaric and cruel and they're awful to women and blah, blah, blah. We're just going to get into the divide and conquer. What I think we can differentiate that any religion...
Islam is totalitarian.
Yeah, any religion that's totalitarian, we don't want.
There's no big organized Christian movement that's going to put beekeeper suits on women and enslave them and do all this. Exactly. So we have to recognize, where is the real totalitarianism in religion right now? It's Islam.
Have you ever had a single moment's thought about my responsibilities? Have you ever thought for a single solitary moment about my responsibilities to my employers?
This is a concerted effort by a group of human beings who are authoritarian, who wish to conquer the entire planet. What we're talking about here is a lower frequency of existence. And we can all imagine, like, you know, when the Aztecs would be like sacrificing people and the Druids were sacrificing little children. These are low states of consciousness. I mean, murdering people in order to placate some vicious god.
Allah promotes violence against the Jews, against the Christians, against the kafir, the unbeliever. Openly, Allah himself is telling the Muslim people to go and kill them with violence. And it's like you're doing favor to God, like you're doing a supernatural, amazing thing by killing your enemies. And the exact opposite is in the Bible, where Jesus comes, Isa comes and says, forgive your enemies, love them, bless them, take care of your enemies. So it's such a huge contrast.
The West goes to empower women, and then somehow the globalists get women to double back to go to the most Stone Age thing there is.
According to the Sharia, again, when it comes to women, there must be a hole dug in the earth, in the ground, and she must be covered up to the half of the body.
So know this, that Islam will enter every house. Every house.
If we fail to acknowledge that what we're witnessing with our eyes, what we're hearing when they say, Muslim, we're going to take over America, everybody will be a Muslim, we'll be in every home. The reason why I keep banging on about this is because I want to save us from falling into the trap of divide and conquer. I know that there has to be Muslims out there that understand what I'm saying, that move to America precisely because of the libertarian construction of the American society. Everything that Christ said to us, it's all about love. And love ultimately is the act of wisdom to know that if somebody is behaving terribly, you can't counteract it by being equally terrible.
I'm cutting this critical announcement on the morning of Tuesday, November 11th, 2025, Veterans Day. You have 48 hours flash sale to get one bottle of ultramethylene blue capsules or liquid tincture and get the second one free and get a free custom Patriot ball cap at thealexjonesstore.com. We've never done a sale this big. It's a flash sale. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason we're always going to be on the air. Because the globalists are close to shutting down InfoWars, the building, and the website, but not we the people of the InfoWar. We have the Alex Jones Network that Bigley owns. They're the owner of thealexjonesstore.com, and that's why it's so critical you go there and support the broadcast and get great products at the same time. Victory is all about being aware, standing up and taking action. And you can't take action in a better way fighting for you and your family's future and our collective liberties than supporting the operation at thealexjonesstore.com. And thank you for keeping me and my crew in the fight.
You're tuned into the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Please make sure you're following us on X. And I mean that. Make sure you're following us because X is messing with things. I was watching in real time as my follower count was going up and then down the other day. They will remove you if you aren't careful. So make sure you're following us. I'm at Harrison H. Smith, at Infowars, at War Room Show, at Real Alex Jones, and at AJN Live, so you can make sure to be following us and be getting our dispatches when whatever happens to this place eventually occurs. Whenever we're kicked out of the building and need to get in contact with you, make sure you're following us on X. And please, please do support us at thealexjonesstore.com. You only have a little under 48 hours to take advantage of this massive sale on Shilajit gummies. Buy one, get one free, and any order gets a free hat, the Black on Black InfoWars hat, at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let him know who sent you. Keep us on the air and in the fight. And you get a free hat. It's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win. It's a 1080 win, as I like to say. And with that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Seamus Coughlin, freedomtunes.com, twistedplots.com. He's just 3 days away from ending the fundraising for a new full-length show, Twisted Plots. Twistedplots.com is where you can go to donate to that and make sure that they get over the finish line. How's the fundraising been going, Seamus?
It's been going really, really well. And firstly, when I began the campaign, I did your show, and I knew that before it ended, I had to come back here. We had such an awesome conversation, and there were like 50 different trains of thought that I went off on for every single thing that you said. So
yes.
I know this is going to be a good conversation. It's a question of whittling things down. I also want to mention my camera, it died. It died on me. So as you can see right now, I'm talking to my phone and it's tilted in a way where it's lower than me. This was not on purpose so that you could all feel I was lording over you or something. The only thing available to me to prop my phone up gives us this low angle shot. But listen, it's great to be back. Fundraising's been going phenomenal. We're pretty close to 75% here. So we're getting near that finish line, and we've been picking up a lot of momentum. We picked up a huge amount of money today, and we just posted another update and another YouTube cartoon that people are going to really enjoy if they want to check that out at Freedom Tunes. And so that almost always comes along with a boost. So we're very excited. We are within sight of the finish line. We're very excited to get there. We need your help. Go to twistedplots.com and support us. You'll get access to our pilot episode, and you will be helping to build the future of entertainment. We live in unprecedented times because throughout all of history, people have internalized their values and developed their values primarily through story. And today, we have the most robust technological infrastructure for delivering story that has ever existed in all of history. And it's completely owned and controlled by people who hate us and hate our way of life and have been slowly chipping away at it through propaganda and with propaganda over the course of decades. We have to fight back, because a civilization cannot survive if the only people telling stories in that civilization want it to die. I started Freedom Tunes when I was 19 years old because I knew we needed to change this culture and push back against the radical left and the authoritarians and the horrible things that they were doing to this country and the horrible things they were doing to marginalize Christianity and Catholicism and the Christian faith. Now, after 11 years, over a million subscribers, over 290 million views, over 600 animated videos, I believe it's time for us to make a full-length show. So we've only got about 3 days left to complete our funding. We cannot do it without your help. Go over to twistedplots.com. Help us to destroy the left's monopoly on entertainment and make something good and solid and entertaining that promotes good right-wing values instead of nihilistic left-wing nonsense.
And does it in a way that doesn't beat you over the head with it, right? And
this
is something we got into last time, that a lot that conservatives have a problem when we create media. We want to be explicit. And, you know,
yes.
I'm not knocking people who want to make a movie about abortion or something like that. But that's not the way Hollywood did it. That's not the way the liberals do it. You make a compelling, good, funny, dramatic, whatever it is, story. And informing that story are the values that you try to put across. So do you consciously do that? Do you consciously try to avoid preaching in your cartoons?
Yes, actually. So in the first script that we wrote for the first episode of Twisted Plots, the first one I put to paper, I sent the script around to my animation team after I was finished writing it. And Caleb, my right-hand man, he kind of pointed out that there was a particular line in it that he said made him feel preached at, and he thought that people watching would see and feel as if they had been preached at. And so I removed it. I modified it. It's very, very important that people can just sit there and be entertained. I'm not sure. Did we talk about Judd Apatow last time that I was here?
I don't think so.
All right. He does this perfectly. He's on the other side. But if you look at a film like Knocked Up or 40-Year-Old Virgin, which you shouldn't watch, a lot of pornographic content in there. I was young when I saw those films. But what he does, for example, in Knocked Up is he tells this story, which on paper is actually kind of wholesome. Two young kids, they're in their early 20s. They make a mistake. They have sex outside of marriage. The woman gets pregnant. But ultimately, it's a story where the man steps up, takes responsibility, and marries her. So on its face, that's actually a good story. Of course, what they do is they throw pornographic moments in the film. And also, they make it clear through the dialogue that the writers of the film and the people creating it would have morally sanctioned the titular characters or the main characters getting an abortion.
Right.
So Judd Apatow does this thing where he tells a story where there's actually a wholesome through line, but then he throws his morality in. He didn't make a movie where they go get an abortion because, A, people wouldn't watch that. That wouldn't be a good or interesting film. It wouldn't speak to that thing that we need to have spoken to us when we're consuming story, when we're hearing narratives. And so it wouldn't have promoted his worldview. Now, I'm not arguing Judd Apatow made Knocked Up because he wanted to make a pro-abortion film or anything like that. I think it was a story that he wanted to tell, but he had to put that element in there to promote his values. And so what we have to do on the right when we're telling stories, when we're making movies, is firstly, we have the luxury of our values being true and pro-human. They're right. Genuinely pro-human. So our stories will naturally speak to people in a way that satisfies their desire for story and their desire for adventure and their desire for truth, beauty, and goodness. So we don't actually need to sprinkle these additional little things in there that left-wing artists and authors need to in order to get their worldview across. Ultimately, the best the left can hope for in telling a story is telling a right-wing or traditional story and then sprinkling their insidious little talking points in there, or putting pornographic imagery in there, making people view sex more flippantly. Or similarly, they can also make films that are frankly not very good in moral quality, but very sentimental. And so they make you feel emotionally for people making bad decisions, so you will sanction the bad decisions. We can tell stories in a much more honest way on the right. And unfortunately, instead, we tell these insane ham-fisted stories that don't entertain people. I'm here to change that. I'm here to fix that. Because not only is it important for us to be able to tell stories that are good, not only is it important for entertainment to be right-wing, but that entertainment needs to be grassroots. It needs to be made by people who have experience in the industry doing these things. And it needs to be made by people who, above all, are going to ensure that they're telling a good, funny story instead of beating you over the head with their message.
Yeah, and you've got the track record. I was singing your praises last time, and I'll double down on that because Freedom Tunes has been just solid content.
Thank you.
I can't think of a miss, you know, out of all the videos. You come out with a lot. I mean, is it weekly? It's biweekly? I mean, you're coming out with
it's
a lot
weekly,
of videos.
Yeah, at least once a week. And we've done a couple this week, actually.
I noticed that because I was going through to check out which ones you've done since you were last on. And I was like, oh my God, there's like dozens. You know, you've got the work ethic, you've got the content there so people can look at it and go, all right, this is a guy I would trust to make something good. It's not, you know, some Kickstarter from an anonymous account saying, trust me, I'll make a show. No, he's got the goods to back it up. And what you're saying about, you know, the way stories are told reminds me of, you know, Parks and Recreation has the great libertarian character, you know, Ron.
Yes.
And he's great and he's funny and it's like a a good representation of libertarianism, where maybe they poke fun at it, but it's still, you know, the memes and everything. It's great. But there's one episode where you think that it's sort of a pro-libertarian episode because this little girl comes to the Parks and Recreation office to do a, you know, a school project on what the government does. And Ron, you know, takes her and just basically tells her the government is horrible and shouldn't do anything. And so I was actually having a discussion with my wife about this years ago when we first watched it. And she was like, this is great. It's like pro-libertarian propaganda. But I'm like, pay attention, because at the last scene, the last part of the story is the little girl comes back and goes, I got a zero on my paper. Ron, what, you know, I have to redo it. And they go, oh, okay, you're right. Let's say why the government is good. And, you know, at the end of the day, even though it sort of might seem like it's promoting libertarianism, really it's the butt yeah. of all the jokes. And at the end of it, they have to sort of shamefacedly admit, yeah, okay, we're kind of stupid and wrong, actually. And so, you know, they are really sophisticated with how they play with these concepts yes. and how they can, you know, it looks like it's positive, but really the message that's being embedded in people's minds is a negative one. It's sophisticated stuff, man. They really think about this when they do it.
But the reason they need to do that with a character like Ron Swanson is because they're incapable of writing him the way that they actually want him to be written, and they're incapable of having him be received by the audience the way that they intended. Mm. This is a huge issue for left-wing satirists, is they'll create these characters who are intended to lampoon right. a right-wing way of looking at the world or a traditional way of looking at the world, and the audience always ends up loving that character right. and hating whichever character is supposed to be the liberal mouthpiece. So you see this virtually anytime they try to satirize the right, most famously with All in the Family and Archie Bunker. Even though, yes, some of the things he said were out of control and people didn't fully agree with them, they still at the very least liked that there was a character who spoke boldly on politically incorrect topics. And above all, he did say things that the audience did agree with and they knew they weren't allowed to believe. And so seeing him express it was cathartic. That's not really what the writers intended. The entire purpose was to make fun of his way of looking at the world. Right. But that never works out for them, right? And so this is not to bring up a sore subject, because I know this comes up on Twitter like every other week, but this is why there's always this debate over Starship Troopers. Is Starship Troopers effective satire? Well, people have an innate sense of truth, beauty, and goodness. And even if you're trying to be a smart aleck about it and satirize the idea of honor and duty and young people fighting to save the world, and, you know, their opponents are these disgusting insects, you calling those young people fascist actually is not going to be enough to override the visceral repulsion that the audience is going to feel for, like, right. the brain-sucking insect that kills Xander at the end. Spoiler alert. So they really can't speak a human language because their ideology doesn't give them the tools to. Their ideology seeks to usurp and overwrite human nature. It's deeply unnatural, and that's why they can't tell good stories. That's why they actually need to be in control of the storytelling infrastructure in order to brainwash people, because when it's a level playing field, people will gravitate towards the stories that are more traditional. And so what we're doing with Twisted Plots is I'm telling stories that I firmly believe are original and interesting and zany and funny and will entertain you, but at the core is a very traditional message. And I didn't have to work overtime to try to fit a traditional message into the stories. If you're telling a good story and your goal is not to propagandize, usually traditional message just naturally comes out, because stories are written in our hearts ultimately. Mm.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I didn't want you to stop. Sorry. I was just listen, sighing along
I'll go
in
all
agreement.
Day, twistedplots.com, baby.
No, you're exactly right. And you know, I want to talk about, change the subject a little bit, but I know this is something that you're on. Banned books. Can we talk about the banned books phenomenon? Because this is cracking yes. me up, and I was seeing it on your feed, but I was seeing it all over the place. Is this phenomenon of the supposed banned books that are bestsellers and available at every bookstore and are being shoved down your throat constantly? But it sort of ties into when the left tells good stories, it's when they are stories of the underdog sort of fighting back against a power structure.
Yes.
Because that
yes.
is compelling. That is, you know, there's something human about that. Not giving up even when the forces arrayed against you are so powerful. And they can tell that story, but it rings hollow, or it just, there's something perverted about it when they are the power structure, but they're still acting like they're not. And they're still yeah. acting like they're the rebels. There's something there, because that's a very compelling thing that they do in their narrative. It's almost always the central point of their narrative is, oh, the downtrodden, disrespected minority, you know, shows the majority what's up, and everybody changes their mind because they're so smart. That's a very compelling thing. And that's a very good like story hook that they always tend to put in their stories because people do like – they like when the underdog wins. They like when the big bad power structure gets destroyed. It's just in our situation, the left is the big bad power structure, but they constantly remind us that they're the underdogs that they should be rooting for. And I think the banned book phenomenon is very emblematic of that.
Yeah, exactly. They have to manufacture an underdog status for themselves because in every heresy, there's a kernel of truth. And the reality is the only thing about the left that genuinely does appeal to any part of the human condition is, as you said, sympathy for the downtrodden. Now, of course, the way the left expresses that is by expecting us to believe that these people are perfect, never do anything wrong. And also, again, by expecting us to believe that they're downtrodden when they control virtually every institution in the entire country and, frankly, the globe. So it falls flat to any critical viewer, and people are really getting exhausted with the tropes. But ultimately, I think you're right. That's one of the few stories that they do have is this underdog tale. Now, even when they try to tell the underdog tale, you know, they basically side with the most powerful group of people who are less powerful when compared to, like, the quote-unquote colonizing white force. Mm. So if you look at even Star Wars, for example, George Lucas said that he modeled the rebellion off of the Viet Cong. Now, you can say, oh, there were these horrible white Americans going to Vietnam and hurting these people. And listen, I agree that the Vietnam War was not a good one. However, the Viet Cong were like murdering Catholic school children. They were not these bold rebels trying to push back against the bad system.
They weren't the Ewoks.
Also, when you look at when you look at the narrative around Columbus as well, right? The Mesoamericans are the underdog. It's like, well, they weren't the underdog to the people who they were literally hunting down and committing like an actual genocide against and flaying alive and chopping their heads off atop their pyramids for blood sacrifices. So they'll actually frame groups of people who aren't victims as victims, like you said. And then they'll try to get you to sympathize with them. But that's one of their most common tricks. And you're right. It's the kind of the only trope that they have.
Yeah. And it's compelling because, again, they recognize the power of narrative. And I think we got into this a little bit last time you were on. But this idea of the narrative war, sort of on top of the information war, is the narrative war. And that the right kind of struggles to tell the story when really our story is the more compelling one. It's about, you know, order from chaos. It's about, you know, establishing things that matter, about making life worth something. And you know, that is the big difference between, like, the Mesoamericans and the Europeans arriving, is that the Europeans had this story of history and where we stood in it. And, of course, it goes back to Christianity. I mean, they were a part of a story that starts with creation and goes through Adam and Eve to the fall, to the resurrection, and where we are in that, in this narrative of humanity, versus the natives here, which, no shade to them, every group of people was at this stage at some point where, when you don't have writing, you don't really have history, everything's just sort of an endless cycle of birth, death, no meaning to it, no arc, no trajectory, just sort of a timeless milieu of just endless repetition. And so, it, like, narrative, it's not just about telling a story to entertain. It's like where we are, our place in the world, what motivates us, what compels us to do anything, really. Like, I'm a father because I want to, like, perpetuate the race that I'm a part of that's achieved so much. And it's like I've been given so much. I feel this burden of responsibility to pass it on to somebody else. And if you're just told that, like, nah, everything's material, you're born, you pleasure yourself, and then you die, and that's all there is, you come out with a very different mindset that leads to very different behavior. So understanding the narrative is more than about, like, where we are at this moment and the narrative of Trump or the narrative of America. It's like the narrative of humanity is one that we're losing grip on, I feel.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's important to remember that these groups of people who were colonized, even though you'll be told by Howard Zinn and basically every single leftist who tries to analyze the issue historically that they were forcibly converted, very many tribes of natives converted to Catholicism because they recognized the truth in it. St. Junipero Serra converted many. And so we're sold, again, this idea that these beliefs were, like, innate to this group of people, and then they couldn't adopt anything else, and so the white man forced it onto them, and aren't we so evil for giving them a different story? When, as you mentioned, the story that we get from Christianity is a beautiful one. Every human is made in God's image and likeness. All of us are descended from two parents and we're all fallen, but we also have traits about us that are positive. And God created many different groups of people because he loves variety and finds that to be beautiful. You look at the way the world is today, and of course, it's we should celebrate every single group of people on the planet except for white people. White people are bad. And then furthermore, you know, diversity is our strength, but again, it's like only strength, our strength in certain contexts. And there's a whole set of rabbit holes we could go down there. But ultimately, the reason this has happened is because we have been sold a meme and we've been living a series of stories for the past several decades that are good stories in a certain sense, but over-applied. So this also happens where you can have truth that's mapped onto things in a way that isn't appropriate. So you mentioned the idea of the underdog story. Yeah, that's true. And we believe that story when we hear it, and for good reason. But you can start mapping that onto things where it doesn't make sense. One really good explanation I heard from a brilliant scientist on one of the flaws with the Darwinian model of natural selection that we're so widely taught is it takes a story, it takes a theory which works on a small scale and it attempts to overapply it. So for example, creatures adapting to their environment with successive generations because they change slightly over time, that is something that we can see at the microbiological level. That's a good story. When you take that and overapply it, you get, oh, well, all life on Earth came from a single cell that emerged from a pile of goo in this chemical soup, you end up with these absurdities. Similarly, with capitalism, with a free market, you start with the story of free trade. Again, good story and a true story, an important story for us to hold to. But then when you overapply that, you end up with an unfettered system where a small minority ends up with all of the property and power. Yeah. Similarly, when it comes to having a social safety net, helping the poor, good story there. You overapply that and you also add resentment towards the wealthy. You end up with like a quasi-communist narrative. So it's good to recognize the kernel of truth in some of these stories, even when they are overapplied.
Mm. Yeah, that's extremely interesting. I completely understand what you mean with things like evolution. I mean, there's kind of a lot of that. I'm thinking of other things that connect to that same concept. And capitalism, I think, is a particularly important one for the way things are going right now. And that and this is actually great because the argument I keep making is, you know, the socialists have the argument. It's that capitalism is evil and they're going to come along and take from the evil billionaires and give to the people. And it's a lie, obviously. It's ridiculous, and it's a horrific failure. But that doesn't mean it's not compelling. Whereas the capitalists in this country aren't really even making an argument. They aren't even, which I would say the argument is all of these globalist organizations came in and are deliberately, you know, disadvantaging you, and they're deliberately screwing you over. And as I keep pointing out, I mean, inequality is a bellwether for death, right? It is. If your civilization really starts experiencing inequality, it's not going to last very long. And it doesn't matter whether it's the fall of Rome or the French Revolution. That's a characteristic that they all share. And you can't ignore that. Again, you're talking about narratives. Look at the narratives of history. Look at the way that empires have built up and then collapsed. Recognize, you know, so then you can see patterns. You can recognize it. And we can change our story if we don't want to take that that same path. Can you stay with us for the whole hour, Seamus?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, because we're about to go to break, and then we'll come back with more with Seamus Coughlin, Seamus underscore Coughlin, that's Coughlin, freedomtunes.com, twistedplots.com, freedom underscore tunes on X as well. But Twisted Plots is where you want to go if you want to get this guy to make a full-length show. There's one episode already, and you get to watch it if you donate, right? If you donate, you get early access.
At any level. You support us at any level, you will get access to that pilot.
Fantastic. And then many, many more to come. We'll talk more about that on the other side. In the meantime, I do want to remind you, please do go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. You get a free hat with any purchase. Shilajit is buy one, get one free. Those are the Shilajit gummies, one of my favorite products. I always take the Shilajit gummies. I always take the Irish Sea Moss gummies. They are jam-packed with naturally occurring vitamins and minerals that your body needs and God gives us through these crazy elements. Shilajit and Irish Sea Moss. Who thought that they would be superfoods that you need? Get them today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Cutting this important announcement on Veterans Day 2025, November 11th. That means you've got 48 hours to take advantage of this unprecedented sale of ultramethylene blue at thealexjonesstore.com, both the capsules and the liquid tincture. Now listen to me. You can buy one bottle of either and get another free. That's massive right now. And on top of it, every order, not just Methylene Blue, gets a free custom high-quality ball cap of your selection and choosing at thealexjonesstore.com. So take action. This is only for 2 days. I was about to end the Methylene Blue ad today because we have the free baseball cap. We've done that before, and it's a huge success. People love it, and that's a big freebie. But it was Veterans Day, and I thought, why am I just cutting an ad about a ball cap? Why don't we make it about health and energizing our lives, not just have a nice hat and spread the word and meet my people. That's fun as well and very informative. So this is a true 360 win. I want to thank all of America's veterans of wars and conflicts, and I want to thank all the viewers and listeners for their support and their word of mouth in the info war, because we are all veterans of the fight against the globalists, their COVID attack, the transgenderism, the open borders, the leftist out-of-control tyrants. And we're winning major battles, but we have not won the war yet. We have turned the tide thanks to all of you. So I want to thank you on this Veterans Day for the next 48 hours for your support. And want to ask those of you that have been on the fence and never tried Methylene Blue, what do you got to lose? You know InfoWars is doing a great job and changing the world. You know we're under globalist attack, so you're supporting the broadcast. You can't lose there, but when you get this incredible product, it will change your life. It does incredible things. It's so good for you. And the ball caps are awesome as well. So this is a first-time sale like it. Buy one, get one free Methylene Blue and a free ball cap. 48 hours until this Thursday at midnight, Central Time, at thealexjonesstore.com. And listen, barring a miracle, just read the news. Corporate media is actually accurate about that. They got the state receiver in here. We've exhausted basically all of our fight. We never gave up. They can close us down, you know, anytime in the next month or so, but it looks like around January 1st is what the receiver from the state court is saying. But that's okay. A website, a studio. The info war belongs to all of us that have stood up and fought the globalists. We're going to continue on. And the AlexJonesStore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by our sponsor, Big League, that hadn't just kept InfoWars afloat, thanks to your support. You kept us afloat through it, but has helped build the Alex Jones Network that they own. We got the backup studio. Bigger studios are being built, just as good as these, maybe even better, thanks to all your support. This is the operation you built. The InfoWar has just gotten started. It's not a website. It's not a building. It is the people who understand there's a war on for their mind, taking their country and their planet back from the transhumanist, satanic New World Order death cult. So take action now and let the tyrants and censors know you will never silence not just the people of the United States, but the people of this planet that are God-fearing and who have awoken to the tyrants and who are taking action. From the bottom of my heart on this Veterans Day, I salute all you and ask you now to count the cost and redouble your efforts in the fight by supporting the tip of the spear, the InfoWar, at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, InfoWars.com, band.video. Please do share those links. And make sure you're visiting FreedomTunes.com and TwistedPlots.com. My guest is Seamus Coughlin. You can follow him on X at Seamus_Coughlin. He is the man behind Freedom Tunes. They've been operating for 11 years, and they're finally making their first full-length, honest-to-God television program, which maybe I shouldn't even call it that since TV is so passe. But it's a real show. It's a full show. Distinct from Freedom Tunes, but with, you know, all the same characteristics that you recognize, TwistedPlots.com. They only have 3 days left to be funded, so go there today and donate, because I want to watch it. I want to be able to watch it and see it, so we need people donating to it. And Seamus, can you tell us just real quick what the plot of Twisted Plots is? What's the show going to be exactly?
Yeah, happy to. So firstly, it's not television, but it is television length. So right. We've already produced our first episode, and it's 25 minutes long. Again, you guys can watch that if you go over to twistedplots.com. And it's an anthology series. So essentially, each week, we tell a completely different, unique story that expresses some kind of edifying value through the jokes and through the story. So think like Twilight Zone or Black Mirror, and the respect that we are exploring a new scenario to get people to think about their moral worldview in every single episode.
There you go. And it'll be funny to boot. And you know, we're sort of talking about like storytelling and narrative and how it impacts people. I think I may have asked you last time, but I don't remember. Have you ever seen the clip of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien? There's a reenactment of it, but it was a real conversation they had about the power of myth. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with this, but I don't think I've ever actually heard it.
Okay, well, we're going to watch it here, if you'll bear with
sure,
me, because it's
yeah.
absolutely worth it. It's a little bit of a longer clip. Normally, I wouldn't play something this long. It's so worth it. So in case people don't know, Tolkien, J.R. Tolkien, author of Lord of the Rings, C.S. Lewis, author of the Narnia books, and a bunch of incredible Christian apologetics, they were together at Cambridge or Oxford University, and they were like best friends. And at the time, C.S. Lewis, who's the younger guy in the video you're about to watch, was a total material atheist. He did not believe in God, had no truck for it, didn't care about it. And it was actually this conversation you're about to watch that really occurred between C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien that first opened up C.S. Lewis to the concept that Christianity might be real. And it was after this that he read the gospel in its original Greek, converted, and became one of the most powerful purveyors of Christianity that the English-speaking world has ever seen. So this is a very important, historically important conversation you're about to see. But it also holds this truth about storytelling that I know Seamus will appreciate. It's a little bit longer of a clip, but I think you'll enjoy it. Lewis and Tolkien debate myths and lies. This is available on YouTube. Let's watch.
Myths are not lies. In fact, they're the very opposite of a lie. Myths convey the essential truth, the primal reality of life itself.
Go on.
Well, you see, we have been duped into using the word myth as being synonymous with a lie, because we have been duped into accepting the first real lie of materialism.
And what is that?
That is the hideous claim that there is no supernatural order to the universe. The materialists have imprisoned us in a world of mere matter, of physical facts, divorced from and devoid of metaphysical truth. Well, I say that they are lying. I say that they are the ones who have come up with a false myth. Their world doesn't exist. It's merely a figment of their imagination. Well, fine. However, there's a problem. The problem is they have convinced us that it is true. They have made us believe that this is all there is. Three dimensions, five senses, four walls.
Isn't it?
Most emphatically not. Jack, the four walls of materialism are the four walls of a prison, and the materialists are our jailers. Don't you see? They've put us in a prison of four walls. They don't want us to see what's beyond those walls. They don't want us to discover what lies outside their narrow philosophy. Worse than that, they think that any attempt to escape from the prison is an act of treason.
Well, wouldn't it be an act of treason against rationality to believe otherwise?
Now, Jack, think for a moment. How can it be wrong for a prisoner to think of things that exist other than walls or jailers? Doesn't the fact that the prisoner is able to think of things outside the walls suggest that perhaps things do exist outside the walls? After all, if the prison really is all there is, how are we able to picture things that exist beyond the prison? And this is where myths come in, you see. Myths exist outside the prison. Myths allow us to escape from the prison. Or if we are not able to escape, at the very least, they allow us to catch a fleeting but oh so powerful glimpse of the beauty that lies beyond the walls.
But what is it that we're meant to be glimpsing?
Well, don't you see the truth, Jack? Myths show us a fleeting glimpse of truth itself.
Truth. Truth. What on earth is this truth that you're talking about?
Ah. Quid est veritas? What is truth? I'm glad to see that you've entered into the spirit of the myth, Jack. You've just cast yourself into the role of pilot.
Pilot? Oh, I see. You're able to believe in the lesser myths because you've already accepted the big one. Once you accept the big myth, the lie of Christ, it's easy to accept the smaller ones. All right, Tolas, I'll play the role of pilot. I wash my hands of the whole nonsense.
Well, Jack, you may be able to wash your hands, but your mind is still muddied. You're not thinking clearly at all, old chap. You're acting as if myths are mere arbitrary inventions of fiction, as if we pull them out of thin air. But what you don't understand is that we make things by the law in which we are made. We create because we are created. Creativity, imagination, is God's imageness in us. We tell stories because God is a storyteller. In fact, he is the storyteller. We tell our stories with words. He tells his story with history. The facts of history are his words, and providence is his storyline.
Are you suggesting that all of history, that everything around us, is all part of some divine myth?
We are all part of his story. This very conversation is part of his story.
But perhaps it isn't his story. Perhaps it's only your story. How can you know that your story, the story that you believe, the Christian story, is any more real than the other story?
But don't you see, it isn't my story. It's his story. You're acting as if Christianity is one myth among many. It's not. It's the true myth. Christianity really happened. Jesus really existed. So did Pilate. And yet it is this true story that makes sense of all the other stories. It is the archetype. It is the story in which all the other stories have their source. And the story to which all the other stories point. It has everything. It has catastrophe and its opposite, what we might call eucatastrophe. It has the joy of the happy ending, the sudden joyous turn in the story that is essential to all myths. It has to a sublime degree this joy of deliverance, this evangelium, this fleeting glimpse of the real joy, to which all other joys are but a distant echo.
So there you go. I'll pull us out there. I kept thinking about pulling us out, but I just had to let it keep going. So it was a little reenactment, but it was a real conversation that happened that C.S. Lewis wrote down and later credited as being sort of the foot in the door that he needed to become a Christian, and again, become one of the most powerful Christian writers the world has ever seen. So, Seamus, thank you for bearing with it. You kind of look like the actor.
It was awesome. I liked it.
Wasn't that cool? Wasn't that interesting? I really think ever since I saw that, I probably think about it once a day for the last 5 years. And so any excuse I have to play it, I want to introduce it to more people. But there's something very, very true about that, isn't there?
No, well, I completely agree with all of that. Anytime we do anything creative, we are participating in God's creativity, and story is a huge part of that. I've always been a believer that it's not merely the case that material reality exists and therefore there must be a God to create the material things. That's obviously true. But also, material reality seems to unfold in what we would call a story. God right. is the great author. That's actually where the word authority comes from. It comes from God, the author of all things. So to have authority is to participate in some characteristic of the author, essentially. God gives you authority over this because he's the author, therefore he has control over it. So when it comes to our creative force, we have to be very careful about the way that we use it as well. And Tolkien was incredible because he made Lord of the Rings, and it is just this profoundly Catholic work, which is enjoyed by everybody. Protestants enjoy it, and not just Protestants who are friendly to Catholics, right? And atheists enjoy it because, again, the story just speaks to the true, the good, and the beautiful. And Tolkien wasn't sitting there going, how can I impose my faith on this narrative? He was a true believer, and so certain themes of the faith saturate the story. But it's not as if he sat there and said, I'm going to make this work and it's going to educate people on things. He was just telling a good story. Right. And that's first and foremost what we have to do. Listen, I don't claim to be a Tolkien, right? I didn't sit down and create a different series of languages for every episode of Twisted Plots that I've written.
You should.
But I agree. I probably should. Don't put that pressure on me. But I totally agree with his philosophy. He was an incredible writer. There's a reason his stories have stood the test of time the way that they have. There's a reason that even though we know those stories are fictional, you know, the Lord of the Rings deniers tell us that the Lord of the Rings is a fictional story, allegedly. Uh-huh. Yet when we watch them, we still feel as if there's a truth there. We still feel that there's a deep truth in those stories because he's right, ultimately, that myth gets to the foundation of reality. And if your story isn't true, it's not going to resonate with people.
Yeah. And when it is true, it will resonate sort of no matter what else, you know, is involved. It's that people resonate with truth. It's sort of, you know, the quality doesn't matter, the whatever else. It's like, yeah, truth is truth and it will always shine through. And then, of course, you know, his point that, you know, all of the stories that resonate with us, they all point back to Jesus. And I mean, it's like absurdly true. When you really start thinking about it, whether it's, you know, Star Wars or Harry Potter, I mean, you know, J.K. Rowling said, if you're a Christian, you know how Harry Potter ends. That's how, you know,
with everyone going to hell for doing witchcraft, that's how it ends. She said, you'll know the real ending. I didn't have to put it in the book because real Christians know.
And then Harry Potter and all of his friends went to hell. The end.
That's right. You know? Yay! Classic Simpsons. I've been talking about this a bit on different shows that I've been doing, the fact that any good story points to Christ. I'm not sure if the last time I came on here, if I explained the way that I feel Shawshank Redemption is an incredibly...
Right.
Well created. Did I discuss that? Can I piggyback off that?
I think I remember you saying that, but yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
So just to give the short version of it, Stephen King, he's not a Christian conservative,
right.
Right? And this film was not made with the intention of being a Christian film either. Frank Darabont wasn't setting out to make a Christian narrative. But when you look at the narrative structure of that film and the actual storyline, Andy Dufresne is, spoiler alert here, an innocent man condemned for crimes that he didn't commit. He enters into the realm of the guilty. Everyone around him swears that they're not guilty. He's an object of curiosity for many. Everyone seems to be intrigued with him, from the lowliest prisoner to the highest authorities in the prison. They have this fixation on him. Who is he? What is he doing? He does things that are mysterious to people. He does things that initially make you think that maybe at first his mission is about social justice, like he builds a library for people and he's helping improve the lives of the prisoners. But then when we get to the end of the story, what you find out is that the true work was occurring behind the scenes throughout the course of the film as he tunnels right out of the prison and really and truly enters through the narrow gate to his salvation. And it's an important detail to note that throughout the course of the film, he's creating this alternate identity. And he's involved in this scheme to launder money for the warden. And the way that that actually even maps onto a Christian understanding is because when he escapes, he puts on, he becomes a new man. He literally has a new identity. He becomes a new man and takes up the treasures that he earned through his suffering during his time in prison. And who is saved with him? The only guilty man in Shawshank. Red is the only person who acknowledges his own guilt throughout the entire film, and he makes it out with Andy. And of course, what's the core message of the film? You need hope. That is a profoundly Christian story, even though it doesn't intend to be one. So people love that movie because it speaks to a truth deep inside of them that they can't escape, and it's so inescapable that people who weren't even trying to tell a Christian story inadvertently did.
Wow, yeah, I had not thought about Shawshank that deeply before, but I think you're right. I think you're onto something there.
It's a great film.
Yeah, and it, there's a reason that it's like one of the most beloved films of all time, and like, you know, definitely tops the list of the top 100 movies of all time in a lot of cases. There's something profoundly true about it and deep about it. And again, we were talking about the underdog story, right? Who's a bigger underdog than the guy getting nailed to a cross, right? I mean,
amen.
Who's a bigger underdog?
The guy who's rising and then coming back.
Right. It is the ultimate victory of the underdog, and just all of these words, redemption, salvation, suffering, like there's something very intrinsic to it because it tells you that the suffering isn't pointless, that there is a point to it. And oftentimes to survive the suffering, all you have to know is that there's a point. And in fact, that's sometimes the only thing that you need. You think, you know, think about how nice there's our lives are, and yet depression is through the roof. And like the place where depression doesn't exist is like a foxhole in World War One, right? It's like the worst conditions ever. But people believed they were fighting for something. They were in a war. They had a purpose. They had a meaning. Their suffering had value. And so they endured it, and they didn't even complain. I mean, there's something, again, very deeply, deeply true about this. And Christianity, as far as I'm concerned, is the only religion on earth that reflects the humanity of these characteristics.
I totally agree. Well, one of the horrible things materialism does is it robs us of our ability to suffer. Suffering becomes totally meaningless.
Right.
There's no value to be found in it at all, and we need to try to extinguish it. Well, how has that worked? I mean, the more we've tried to extinguish suffering, the more comfortable we've become, the more miserable we've become.
Right.
We're not capable of doing this.
How crazy is that? It's so true. And it's like, I was thinking about this yesterday, where it's like, people have lost the plot. The point of life is to like to achieve certain things, to do certain things, to pass on your bloodline, to meet somebody, to cause, you know, joy to flourish around you. And it's like in pursuit of the responsibility, you find real joy. In pursuit of pleasure, you abandon joy outright.
That's right.
It's kind of hard to explain, but it's like by taking the surface level pleasure, you abandon the really deep joy that you find by trying to avoid pleasure. Actually, it seems inverted, but like that again is like God telling us this story. It wouldn't be this way if God didn't want it to be this way.
Well, it's interesting because C.S. Lewis actually comments on that. I can't remember the exact way he puts it, so forgive me for butchering this, but he refers to what I remember is like first things and second things. And basically, if you focus on the first things, you get the second things.
Right.
But if you only fixate on the second things, you lose the first thing. So the first thing might be a little bit more arduous, but it gives rise to all sorts of benefits. But if you only focus on trying to reap the benefits without, again, maintaining focus on the first thing, you end up losing the second thing. And that's essentially what we've been trying to do with our cultures, creating as many innovations as we possibly can to strip people of the necessity to do what is necessary to create these more pleasurable or enjoyable states. But in doing so, we rob them of meaning. We've robbed ourselves of meaning. Think about how much more depressed everybody is today than they were in the past. And you can point to the difficulties that existed in life. And this is one of the hilarious things. People will reveal how badly they've missed the point when they're snarky about some of these things, because you'll say people seem to be happier in the past, and they'll go, Redditor here, actually, in the past, infant mortality rates were higher, and they didn't have modern medicine, and people didn't have temperature-controlled homes or economic prosperity. It's like, yes, no, I know that, idiot. They were still happier. Why? Why are we so miserable today when there's so much material abundance? That's a serious question we need to explore, because if the materialists are correct, in all that happiness truly is, in the highest fulfillment that we can actually seek is a specific chemical reaction that occurs at the level of the brain and gives rise to the qualitative experience of pleasure or joy or some sense of purpose, then we should have achieved that long ago. Or if we just keep rearranging our prosperous material environment, we should be able to achieve that. And yet none of us can see any evidence of anything remotely like that occurring. We only seem to be getting more and more miserable. It's not as if life was very miserable in the past, people were extremely miserable, and then our material prosperity increased and our misery decreased. It seems to be the case that as material prosperity has increased, our spiritual well-being, our sense of fulfillment has actually decreased.
Yeah.
And it's not to say, and I don't, Sorry, I don't want to come off like a total Luddite. These modern innovations that we have, many of them, they are very good things that can be used for very good reason, and very good reasons. But, you know, obviously, thank goodness we live in a culture, in a civilization where we don't have 50% of all children dying before the age of five. That's an absolute nightmare. But also the problem is that we don't appreciate it,
exactly.
Right? The problem is not that society... The problem is not that we have these innovations. The problem is not that children aren't dying as babies the way they used to in the past. The problem is that we take it for granted. We don't care.
Yep. And this is such I'm totally cheapening your very deep and sincere thought here. But this is just what it makes me think of. In elementary school, I was obsessed with the game Baldur's Gate for PC. It's just the best game ever. And I loved it. And I played it constantly. And then I learned how to cheat. And then I learned I could get any item I wanted by typing a few keystrokes. And the game started sucking. And And as a kid, I didn't even realize why. I was just like, why isn't this game fun anymore? And then I decided, you know, I'm going to do another game playthrough and I'm not going to cheat this time. And it was like, oh, right, this is fun. It's actually having these items isn't fun if you just type a thing on the keyboard. It's fun when you grind out and you really, you know, make your character and then the character kills somebody and gets the item. Then it's achievement. Again, totally cheapening the very important point making.
I think that's toxic masculinity. I think that's toxic masculinity, and you shouldn't play those kinds of games. No, you're totally right. As soon as you have the cheat code, like when you're playing Call of Duty Zombies, you want to get the ray gun, but if you put the cheat in to get all the guns, it's like it's not fun anymore, man. This is just lame.
There's something about that, and it's true on a societal level, and it's true on an individual level, too. You want to find a miserable person, go find a billionaire. They're miserable. Like, I know some of them, and, like, sometimes the guy who makes the money will be happy, but then his family is just a mess.
And I'm happy, by the way, I'm happy to take some of that misery from them. If they want to go to twistedplots.com, give me a little bit of that misery so I can get this show made and change the culture, I am so happy to offer up that service.
Absolutely. Make him miserable by going to twistedplots.com.
This does tie back because part of the reason we fail to be grateful for the things that we have in our culture and part of the reason that people, even though they're able to attain immense material prosperity, aren't happy is because we're not programmed with the right stories. We don't have the right infrastructure mentally for dealing with reality. What I am trying to do with Twisted Plots is tell stories that edify people and help them develop a clearer vision of reality. I also recognize that a civilization cannot exist for very long if all of the people in control of the gatekeeping for what stories are told hate that civilization. Yeah. Our culture is not just disliked by people who are in charge of storytelling and have monopolized this industry. It is hated by them. They've been chipping away at it for decades. I want to save the culture by saving media. If you believe in that, go to twistedplots.com, support the show, but you got to do it before it's too late, okay? We've got 3 days left. We need to get funded in order to be able to make all of the episodes that we want to make for our first season so that we can add to the culture instead of taking away from it, which is what so much entertainment does, and so that we can send the message to the dominant media culture that people are sick and tired of the garbage that they're feeding them, that they want entertainment to have good values, and that they want it to be grassroots and not produced by multi-billion dollar conglomerates.
100%. And you know how Hollywood works. You know how this works, guys. Once one movie or one show is successful, you get 15 other, you know, right away. So maybe this will be this won't just be Twisted Plots and Freedom Tunes, you know, making a show. It'll show people, oh, this is the path to success. And then maybe it'll spawn even more. This could be the beginning of a revolution in animated cartoon storytelling. TwistedPlots.com, FreedomTunes.com, Seamus_Coughlin, that's Coughlin, or Freedom_Tunes on X. 3 days left. Go support them at TwistedPlots.com. Thanks for being here with us, everybody, and to you as well, Seamus. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm cutting this critical announcement on the morning of Tuesday, November 11th, 2025, Veterans Day. You have 48 hours flash sale to get one bottle of ultramethylene blue capsules or liquid tincture and get the second one free and get a free custom Patriot ball cap at thealexjonesstore.com. We've never done a sale this big. It's a flash sale. I was sitting here this morning about to cut the announcement about the free ball cap to celebrate Veterans Day, not just for our military veterans, but veterans of the info war. And I thought, wait a minute, let's extend the Ultra Methylene Blue sale, even though it's close to selling out. Don't worry, more's coming in a few weeks. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason we're always going to be on the air. Because the globalists are close to shutting down InfoWars, the building and the website, but not we the people of the InfoWar. We have the Alex Jones Network that Bigley owns. They're the owner of thealexjonesstore.com, and that's why it's so critical you go there and support the broadcast and get great products at the same time. Victory is all about being aware, standing up, and taking action. And you can't take action in a better way fighting for you and your family's future and our collective liberties than supporting the operation at thealexjonesstore.com. So you have 48 hours to buy one bottle of Methylene Blue, get one free, and the free ball cap right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Now again, ladies and gentlemen, we're winning some big battles here. We haven't won the war, and the globalists have been salivating over getting us off the air. They are so ridiculously foolish. We're not going to miss a beat. We're going to be on all the same radio stations, all the same systems. It's going to blow up in their face, bigger than ever. The only missing equation is you continuing to spread the word when we make this move and supporting us at our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com, while getting products that enrich you and your family's lives. The only way you fail is not taking action. And don't forget what Thomas Jefferson said during the Revolutionary War. The only thing that evil men in tyranny to flourish is that good men do nothing. You're the good men and women. Take action now. Support the tip of the spear, thealexjonesstore.com, and I salute you from the bottom of my heart, and thank you for keeping me and my crew in the fight.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.